Purpose Projects.
Hello and welcome to another brand new episode of Purpose Projects, the podcast with the sustainably good stuff. And as you might already know, my name is Moritz and at my side is Boris.
Hi Moritz. Yes, hello also from my side. Very much looking forward to this talk and our episode today. Why don't you let the people know what today's focus actually is?
Today's focus, well, is a bit of healthcare system, but a lot of focusing on purpose, innovation, and organizational structure. The reason being, Joost de Blok is our guest. He started Boerzorg, a Dutch healthcare organization with a nurse-led model, nowadays employing over 10,000 people. And we're going to talk about the simple and flat structures they employed. And yeah, in the next minutes, you'll hear all about that. And a quick spoiler, Boerzorg is Dutch and means neighborhood care. So have fun with this episode.
Dissatisfied with the delivery of healthcare by traditional home care organizations in the Netherlands, Joost de Blok decided to create a new model anchored on the self-management capacity of nursing professionals, ultimately resulting to a more responsive, patient-centric system, giving better quality care. Today he is joining us and we are very happy about it. Welcome and yeah, thank you for taking the time with us, Joost. Welcome to Purpose Projects. Yeah, Joost, I want to start off by reflecting a little bit. The last 2.5 years must have been more than crazy, not only for the world in itself, but also for you and Boerzorg. Healthcare and especially the term essential workers have pretty much constantly been in the news, in Germany at least, but in the Netherlands probably also. So tell us maybe first off, how are you right now and how is the overall mood in the Dutch healthcare system?
Well, that's I think if I start with myself, I'm fine. I think we're already full of new ideas. What happened last 2.5 years was something I think nobody expected. It was very intense, but it also showed the flexibility of the way we are working. So we had a lot of discussions with the government and the policy people about the strategy. So we said, in many ways, we can be much faster in using decentralized mechanisms. But the government decided to centralize everything and to do everything in a way that they thought I felt control, but the opposite happened. So many things went wrong. What we've shown is that there was a lot of resilience in the teams. And we learned from the teams who had to face COVID in the beginning. So in Holland, it went from the south to the north. And it was quite of an interesting learning experience. The first thing we did was to take our precautions for every nurse. To say, we said, let's work as safe as possible, which was in contradiction with what the government said. He said, if you're doing community health nursing, you don't need face masks or you don't need to be so careful. We said, we don't know yet what will be the risks and so on. So we said, yes, we will use them. We will take care for everything we need. We created a crisis team, which existed quite organically. And we listened to the teams, we advised the teams, we created this distribution center, and we created a studio because it was more difficult to reach everybody. So we said, let's do it online so that we can. So we built a professional studio, and we started to send webinars on a lot of topics. So if you look at the situation now, then I think the sickness rate is lower than the average in Holland. So you see that in hospitals, a lot of nurses are exhausted. Also, in a lot of organizations, colleagues or competitors, whatever you want to call them, people are also tired and also mentally tired. So, and what we see in our organization, we ended in May officially the COVID period with a very big party. So we hired a place where all the nurses could come, could sleep. We had a party with thousands of nurses, and we were dancing, drinking, eating, and talking about everything we wanted to share. I did a performance as a woman, because for me it was an ode to the women I worked with for all my life. So I had a beautiful red dress, and I had a song from a beautiful
Celine
song.
Celine Dion?
No. It's I sang all the time. I'm so proud or happy that I'm a woman. So that's I've been working for 40 years in between women as a nurse, and I think I was so proud that we went through all these things last 15 years. They built all these teams everywhere in the country. They took all the decisions themselves. And they, it's so funny to see they keep up the spirit every time again.
Yeah.
So, and this is, I think it's the last few 2-3 years showed also the success of such a model.
Yeah, so 5 minutes in and we can already tell that Dutch companies party a bit different, but I love it. And the thing that you mentioned about people being tired of COVID, I think that's something everybody can agree on. And let's get back to maybe even further. So before COVID, the period, we have a lot of German listeners. And when we talk about or we think about the year 2006, I bet every second German would say, yeah, that was the World Cup here in our home, in our hometown or in our country. And a lot of positive emotions. And for you personally, you started Burzok. And just thinking back to that year, what did you feel at that time? And what was your motivation of starting this now company with over 10,000 employees?
Yes, I think 2006, February 13th, I resigned. I was director of innovation. And I had, at that moment, I have been working in healthcare for 25 years, around 14 years as a nurse. So, and in that period, when I worked as a nurse, I was really inspired by the conditions I could work in. So I had my freedom as a community health nurse, and I could decide everything myself. So I had wonderful colleagues. We sat together every few weeks, and that was it. So I was taking care for patients, taking care for the prevention for little children, working closely together with doctors and so on. So my frustration started when the systems were changing. So we got a whole new idea about how healthcare should be organized professionally. So, and that with professionally, it was meant big organizations with a lot of management layers and policy makers and so on. And I was still this nurse. So I promised my colleagues that I would only be satisfied if I could change the system again. And in the meantime, I was 10 years, I was director in two bigger home care organizations. And I just, in 2006, I just finished a project in Ukraine where I was involved in a national project on developing primary healthcare. And it was a very successful project. So then I thought, if I can do it in Ukraine, why shouldn't I do it in Holland? So I designed a model, and it took me 1.5 years. So I started in 2005, and then 2006, I was convinced that when I should create an environment where nurses would like to work in, that they should come over from other organizations. So it was the simple idea, small groups, self-organized, based on a certain vision on professional ethics, intrinsic motivation, based on all kind of ideas I learned throughout my life. And at that moment, I felt in 2006, I felt convinced we didn't have anything yet, but I was convinced that we would be successful. And whenever I talked with a nurse about this idea, these nurses said, "This is great. I would immediately start working for this organization." So I started at the end of 2006 with the first team. I started to work again myself as a nurse, and it was hard work and it was uncertain, but it was also it felt like freedom. You know, I could.
Awesome.
It was the first time in my life that I felt that I could do anything based on my own perception, on my own motivation, my own ideas. So, and when I felt this first year, I was driving through the country. So imagine that we just had a few nurses, and I was driving to Amsterdam, to Rotterdam, to the north, to the south. And everywhere where I came, there was a group of people who heard from it, and they heard about Butzach in the news or in the newspaper. And they said, "What do we need to do to start here?" And I said, "Make a plan of your neighborhood or your village. Think about everything you need. We will hire you. I already started this foundation. We will pay you a good salary, but you are responsible for everything." So, and it usually started with four nurses, and then they already had their colleagues who said, "Okay, when things are going well, we will join." And it was, you know, the first year it was 12 teams, so every month a new team. And 2008, it was 15 teams per month. So it was almost every few days, there was this small group. Just usually the first day visited already an existing team. So it was a kind of an excursion. And then they asked, "How did you do this?" "Ah, we did it like this." "Oh, then we will make our plan." And then I had just a small interview with everybody. And then I said, "How many hours do you want to work?" "Okay, and how fast do you think you can be successful?" One team was more difficult than another. But most of them were from day one, it looked like they used their brains in a different way. So the same feeling I had with this freedom, it was in a flow immediately. So it was always before they started, they came to Almelo, where our office was. We had lunch together. We talked about our lives and our important things in our lives. And then they went home with materials, laptop, thing. And yes, we start. And that feeling, I still feel this, that was so amazing, that this recognition of, okay, these are the good things we should do. It's we need to be financially healthy, but that's not the purpose. The purpose is that we can take care for all these people, for all these vulnerable people, in the best possible way. We can make our own decisions. We can create an environment that we can build on. So we will build our own network. We will hire our own colleagues, and we will build a team with colleagues we love and we like. So this, and this, that happened since 2006 and still is day by day going on.
A really inspiring story, Jos. And as you just mentioned in your last sentence, sitting here reflecting upon it 16 years later, it speaks volumes from your words that you sound like it was like yesterday you founded this company. You sound just as motivated and passionate about these topics. So thank you very much for those really, inspiring, and I hope also for our listeners, exciting insights into how Burzor came about and what it also is today. But before we actually talk about what the company is today and what you actually specifically do on a maybe daily basis, we have one format in this podcast, which is called Purpose Preguntas, which is Spanish for questions. Thank you, Moritz, for that again. Which is basically just five quick questions with, quick answers. But usually our questions are not that short, but we try to anyways every episode. And I will just start with the first question. What would have been your field of work, Jos, if it would not have been healthcare?
Probably economics.
Burzok is active in over, I think, 25 countries. And it's like the McDonald's of of healthcare. You're growing crazy. But now taking the perspective of the elderly, what is the best place to grow old?
At your own environment, with your friends, your family, your children around, a normal environment for everybody, everywhere in the world.
Really good answer. What is your favorite brand or company besides your own?
I don't have a favorite brand or company.
Oh, okay. Well, then maybe the next question. Fuck up culture. I don't know if you've heard of this term. Fuck up culture. So, founders doing mistakes. I'm a big fan of this culture, of also talking about stuff that didn't work out. So maybe you can tell us about one fuck up that has happened since the time of 2006.
No, I don't. I don't think I like it. Everybody's allowed to make mistakes.
Yeah.
But I don't think you should not make them if it's not needed.
Exactly, but it's more about like learning from them, like in that
learning. The whole life is about learning.
Okay.
That's true.
But I'm sorry, we didn't make big mistakes. So
that's good. That's good. Not making mistakes is better than making them, definitely. Last but not least, in 2014 you received the Albert Medal of the Royal Society of Arts in the UK. Following the likes of actually Marie Curie and also Stephen Hawking, that's nice company. What other accomplishment do you personally strive for?
Not one. Only that, not for myself. From the beginning, my idea was that if we can change the lives of people just by doing little changes in the daily practice of people who are vulnerable, and we can translate it towards everywhere, then I think we done an immense job. So for me, if that comes with accomplishments, then it's fine. But it was never our goal to win prizes or have any medals or whatever. So I even wouldn't know where the medals are.
Okay.
And of course, the thing you said about when I first got a letter that I was nominated for this medal, I thought it was a joke. because you know you get these letters about an advertisement or something. And then I saw something more about who got this medal, and I thought, so why do they want to give it to me? And then I got a phone call from London, and then said, yes, you have a big impact on what's happening in the world. So I said, why do you think so? And then he said, the way that people recognize and understand what you're doing, and the fact that you are setting an example is inspiring for many people. So well, then I went to London to get the medal, and I was very proud.
Yeah, you can be. You did a great choice of going there. we actually, beforehand, we already talked about some of the questions, and I was sure that you would say, yeah, you're not going to strive like for more. Just shows how social oriented maybe you are, and what values you also put into Burzok. And a lot of people may have not even heard about Burzok, but about the Burzok model. Especially mm-hmm. People that are read a lot about new work. We've had Lena Marbacher from Neue Narrative on our podcast. She has a magazine. You've been mentioned there. Then there's a famous book, Reinventing Organizations, where they also talk about the Burzok model. Now we have the founder here on the call. So how would you explain the Burzok model, and what does it mean for your daily life?
For me, it's about how can I create an environment based on some psychological and sociological principles that brings the best out of people in their daily work, so that people can develop themselves, be themselves, enjoy themselves in their daily work, and grow like a person, grow in your work. And if this, I think these principles are universal, so you can use them in any company, but especially in healthcare, if you use your professional skills and your professional ethics in finding solutions for the people you're dealing with, then these solutions will be much more effective, of much higher quality. And it will be much more satisfying to do it this way. So what I did was create small teams of around 10 people working in a neighborhood, taking care for all the people that needed support or that need support from them. And what we saw was, just by doing this and letting them decide on everything themselves, that the quality went up significantly. The costs went down with 40-50%, and the satisfaction was the highest. So on both the nurse's side and the patient side. And if you look at the way we have grown from 4 to 10,000 nurses, and we have also some separate organizations beside Burzok based on the same principle. So now we have 15,000 people. And it's all supported by a small back office of 50 people. And one of the most magic parts, I can say, was the technical part, our IT system. So one of my friends, which I've been working with for many, many years, was an IT specialist and also a musician. And he played in a band. And I always say that he composed IT strategy, because he could foresee in 2005, 2006, how some of these technical solutions could work out in 15 years. So he had this insight. It was just, Facebook was just starting. So he said, we will make something like Facebook. It will be a community where we can share our ideas, our knowledge, our experiences, but where we also take care for all the bureaucracy. So we will take care for everything that people the nurses are seeing as a burden, and we will automate it so that they can focus on taking care for the patients, and all the bureaucracy is taken care for by our IT system. And, you know, it's amazing how it worked out. And still our nurses are so happy about using this and feeling that it's helping them to get rid of all the nonsense. So all these things create, you can see that together, that's the Bützow concept. And for us, it's just a normal way of looking at the world, but it's so different from traditional organizations. So imagine I'm not making policies. I'm not making policy plans, strategic plans. All this thinking, MBA thinking, I call it usually, from top down is turned around. So that you have to start in the context where people work. You get your information from that. You build your networks there, and you should create enough flexibility that you can do everything that's needed to keep on going. So, and for me, it's amazing because that's the way I am. So for me, it feels like it's natural and it's organic, and I can talk with everybody about everything, and we can just discuss to start something new, and if we want it, we do it. So it's creating a lot of space for everybody, I think. You see that it also changed people's lives in their private situation, that they feel that they can decide on everything themselves. They should not listen to a manager or somebody who don't really know what she's doing. So this is, for me, it's the professional part, but also the private part is that I wanted that people feel that it's a social kind of movement that you're part of, and you can contribute to it the way you want.
Really fascinating to hear those words and thoughts about your structure of the company directly from you. And you also said those principles that you use at Bützow are basically universal. So if companies wanted to, they could use them also. And you also said this really interesting thing of reversing this top-down traditional system or model companies use today. Would you say that this is the biggest difference to other models compared to other traditional companies, especially in the healthcare field or system? Or are there other important differentiations between you and other traditional healthcare companies that people maybe don't know about?
No, I think one of the big differences is in the philosophy. That we think that we do the best possible things if we don't make us ourselves not needed anymore. So if you see in the world where healthcare is more and more seen as a market, that you can sell everything to patients. So patients trust healthcare workers. So when you have a trustful relationship, you can make people easily depending on you. What I say is, no, that's unethical. You should not do that. You should take care for people in a way that in the most ultimate situation, they don't need you anymore. So then you're not selling activities, hours, or whatever. No, you are creating solutions. And of course, that's very valuable for society. So health insurance want to pay for these solutions. So as a party for the or a kind of a partner for the health insurance, they are very happy about what we're doing. So, but that's a different, and what's really, I think, different from a business perspective is that we build an organization based on what we are doing and not the other way around. So what I did in the organization I worked before, every year we had strategic days, and then we were making a new vision and a new mission and policy plans, and then we make the year plan, and there was a policy cycle, but it was all from imagined that you as a CEO or a board or managers, directors, should think how all the others in the organization should work or what they should do. But we do it the other way around. So we say, we ask the nurses what's happening. Do we see new trends? Do we see new things we should say, okay, let's create another service or another solution or whatever. And that's really, you only, when you only when you're participating in it, then you just feel the difference. So for example, new people in different roles, sometimes it, not for the nurses, but for the people around, it sometimes takes a year before you feel comfortable with it, because you're used so easily to develop something as a policymaker or as a manager. And we say, no, you have to step back and you have to listen. So your ears are more important than your mouth.
And that's probably the reason why I think you've already been granted 3 times the Employer of the Year in the Netherlands, if I read it right.
Five
times now. Yeah, it's you're giving your employees a lot of decision rights eventually.
That's something that a lot of people don't understand, right? You can't give this. You can take it away.
Okay. Yeah.
And that's a very, very big difference. So a lot of people, when they ask me advice, you know, I am traveling through the world and I'm asked for a lot of conferences and companies. And then they say like this, like, you know, I've been trying this now for a few years and I try to give them freedom and autonomy, but they don't take it. And then I usually say, I said, but do you really think you can give freedom and autonomy and the right to decision? I think that's impossible. You can't take it away. You can, and that's what's happening in a lot of organizations, that people start with positive motivation, and then they learn that there are all kinds of restrictions. They're not, it's not very welcomed when they speak out their thoughts. So then suddenly there is somebody who says, no, that's my task, that's my role. So, and then, you know, people start to adapt to it, because otherwise you can't work there. And that's so damaging. You imagine the young people, 20 plus, and then have this idea about, I'm going to change the world. And then the first years, they got already the frustration that they are not allowed to do what I think they should do. And this causes the biggest problem, for example, in Dutch healthcare, that in a lot of organizations, nurses go away within 3 years. So they studied, they work for 3 years, and they're so frustrated that they leave the system. And I think it's in Germany the same. So and I say, okay, if you have the perception that you can't give freedom and autonomy, but you can create an environment where people feel the intrinsic motivation and feel that they can do what they think they should do. That's a psychological and sociological thing, in my opinion. So, and then you are going to act differently, also as a leader. Then you're going to ask people instead of telling them. So then you create a dialogue model instead of doing the patterns of top down. So for me, it's a very essential point.
Mm-hmm.
This is where a lot of organizations go wrong when it's about self-organization.
It's a shift in mindset.
Yeah.
I'm not going to focus on that tomorrow, because we still have a couple more questions, but very, very thought-provoking. Yeah. Thank you for that. This mind shift led to Bürzog being one of the most innovative companies, especially in that field. Can you maybe give us like the user experience, like the digital world would say, how do nurses bring in ideas, pitch in ideas, and then how do they actually scale in your model?
Well, it happens in many ways. So the one of the ways it happens the most is that they just share it on our web. So, for example, there was one of the nurses had a patient, and this patient said, "There are competitions for everybody, but not for us elderly behind walkers." And then this nurse thought that would be a nice experiment. So she started in Amsterdam creating a race for people with walkers. So, and it became, it was in the news, and I read it myself in the newspaper. So I called her. I said, what a wonderful idea. And she said, yes, I mailed you once in a while, and you said, go on with it, and nice idea. Yeah, I said, but I didn't know that you were actually doing this. After this, they started to do this everywhere, all over the country. And we hired the Olympic Stadium in Amsterdam so that people were coming with buses from all over the country with family members, around 90. The eldest last time was 104. And doing a race of 400 meters or 800 meters in the Olympic Stadium in Amsterdam. Imagine the shift in thinking that people were training for a race instead of sitting behind the window and the flowers. And this, you know, the grandchildren I talked to, they said, I'm so proud that my grandma is still winning a medal in Amsterdam. These things happen if you don't do anything. So if you don't have a department for innovation. So this is you can use it for everybody. This has changed the life for many thousands of people in Holland. And we even did it once, had a participation of German elderly. So, and my aim is to do it all over the world. So one day, we will hire different Olympic stadiums in Asia, Tokyo, Shanghai, Seoul, whatever, and we will do the race all over the world. And it just started with one nurse, Marjolein, who had this brilliant idea and thought this can be replicated everywhere. This is how good, in my opinion, good innovation starts. So what we do is all the time listen to people who say, oh, if we just change this a little bit, and we can do it for thousands of people, it has an enormous impact. So this is the most common way something starts. But of course, we also have technical things where the experts, then we asked the nurses who have a certain special skill on using a technique. So then we invite them to talk about what's useful and what is not useful. And then they say, okay, let's try this. And if we think that this is a good thing to do, then we tell it all the others. So, but most of the things are very organic, never with a big master plan or something.
Yes, I hate to do it, but there is, I think, no better way to end our episode than after this incredibly awesome stories of elderly people racing in an Olympic stadium. I think Moritz and I will do our best to also support this idea being done maybe in our Westfalenstadion in Dortmund. I think there would be a lot of people supporting that.
My grandma would smoke yours.
That's the slogan. That could be the slogan or the claim. Jos, before we end our awesome talk and our really inspiring episode, I can only say that again, we have a last question that we ask every one of our podcast guests. As usual, last question is who should we have on our so-called purpose radar? Any person, any company, any book, podcast that is maybe inspiring you on a daily basis, or yeah, just has been inspiring in the last time that you have seen, or a person you've talked to that really inspired you that we also should learn and know about?
Yes, I was listening when I was driving in my car to a podcast with Mr. Chaudhry. And Mr. Chaudhry is the CEO of Jaipur Rugs in India. And I met him several times, digital, because he wanted to learn from Buurtzorg. And it was such an honor that this man who has a long history and has a wonderful vision on how he made artists from the weavers. So the Jaipur Rugs is making carpets, and the beautiful carpets, you can see it on the website. But this Mr. Chaudhry went back to his roots after that the organization changed to a more traditional organization. And he said, the real artists are the weavers. So we should focus on the weavers and the families of the weavers. So in this, if you talk with this man, you will understand what I mean. He's a really very inspirational, very modest, and very humble man. And it was I learned a lot from him. So,
well, Jos, thank you a lot for being on this podcast. I'm sure a lot of our listeners learned a lot today in this call. And yeah, we wish you a great day and hope to see you soon in the near future.
Thank you. Welcome.
Thanks, Jos.
So, Boris, now we had another Dutch founder on our podcast, but I think this one might have been a bit more special. I don't want to be too mean, but yeah, what did you take away from this episode?
I don't know if you have to be mean. He was different for sure, but I really liked it and actually loved our conversation. And for total transparency to our listeners, we're recording our outro, I don't know, like 10 seconds probably after our talk with Jos. So really, really fresh thoughts. I absolutely loved his thoughts and his mindset in explaining why the Buurtzorg model and structure and way of working is special, and I hope that our listeners understood it. Yeah, but I personally have to say, I don't know how you feel about it, this field of healthcare is, I think, a really specific and special one, and yeah, I find it also I think this is the reason I found it really interesting and yeah, a little bit maybe more difficult than other topics in following Jos and what he was trying to tell us and explain to us. I don't know, how about you?
Yeah, I thought he didn't even touch too much upon the healthcare system. I'm glad for that because not too many people want to hear about regulations on a podcast, but more like he even talked about the organizational DNA and about that mind shift we talked about. It's pretty inspiring stuff. I have to say, I love business development and innovation, and his way of innovating within an organization is a culture a lot of companies are trying to establish, but always or often fail because we do have a lot of egoism on the workplace. But I learned a lot. I can't say anything else. And Jos has achieved a lot in his life until now, and he's still thinking big. So Olympic races or like a World Cup with 80 plus elderly. So that's pretty nice. Yeah. So I'm really happy that after our episode 2 weeks ago, we have another very relevant topic for not only us, but also all our listeners. And yeah, let's maybe close out this episode with some Purpose Bubble updates. We mentioned that we are going to start one mini format at the end, so we're always checking what other Purpose projects are up to or were in the headlines. So Boris, did you come across anything?
Yes, I did indeed. I saw a really interesting, I don't know what you call it in English.
A piece,
yeah. Thank you. A content piece, I would say it, in video form.
A show.
Oh, yeah, that's what it's called. Right, thank you. It's Monday, it's late. I have trouble finding the right words.
Same.
People, sorry for that, and I hope you have an understanding for us. Today, yes, the show is actually called Neo Magazin Royal by Jan Böhmermann. I think, our German listeners, our German listeners at least will know that show, and maybe our English listeners at least know who Jan Böhmermann is. Anyway, there was a show, the topic of this week's show, or last week's show, or actually 2 weeks ago, I'm not sure, was water, and how water is treated in today's society, and how rare it's getting actually, and how valuable it is. And a company called Viva con Agua, maybe a lot of people also know about that one, especially in Germany, was getting criticized due to a lot of reasons and a lot of stuff. People who are interested can rewatch that show. I'm not going to list all those things they were criticized about right here and right now, but what was also really interesting, because we had Viva con Agua also on this podcast, not really recently, like I think pretty much at the start of our podcast. I am not sure, was it the second, third episode, something like that,
a bit later.
But relatively early in our podcast, and we had Caroline Stüdemann, who I think was chairwoman or CEO, something like that. I'm not quite sure, but relatively high up in the hierarchy. And I know Moritz is signaling me stop talking. It's late.
this format sucks.
I'm getting to my point. It's Monday and it's late. I already told you. Everybody who wants to know a bit more why Viva con Agua was getting criticized, it's really interesting. So rewatch that show. Moritz, how about you? How about your Purpose Bubble updates, which should be a quick format?
Yeah, it was.
We failed in that.
Yeah, you failed. I'm going to do it quick. So Purpose Economy had a conference where they talked about purpose, and they had a lot of nice guests, including Rutger Breckmann, which we asked to get on this podcast, but he didn't have time. But doesn't matter. I still love him. And a startup which listens to this podcast, I know that. Lotta Ludvigsson is the company, and they just started a crowdfunding campaign. We're going to link that in the show notes. So yeah, check it out. They are doing circular fashion, and support them.
Do it. I'm not going to say a single word more. So you can close out the show.
No, it's late. It was an awesome episode with Jos, and talk to you in 2 weeks.
Thanks, Moritz. Thanks, guys. Bye.
Bye. Thank you.